Hi, hello. We have a jam-packed episode of the Dunker Spot coming to you today. We continue our division previews, and we got two for you. We start with the Atlantic Division, and then we close with the Central Division. We hope you enjoyed this episode. Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of the Yahoo Sports Network. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, the always excellent Steve Jones Jr. Steve, how are you, sir?
Feeling good, feeling great, happy to be here, excited to be here. Thank you, Dunkers, for once again embracing your bounce. Nikias, it's time for us to continue hooping it up.
It is indeed time to continue, Steve. We've got two division previews for you on this episode. Timestamps are going to be your friends, but we got a double decker in this one. But first, we have some news to the Pacific Division. We're not talking about them yet. That'll be on the next episode. But we did have some news out of division, more specifically with the Sacramento Kings. They got a little busy. One, we have finally gotten the agreement after all of the offseason murmurings and rumblings and all the things. Russell Westbrook will be a Sacramento King, one-year deal at the vet's minimum. They've also extended the contract of Keegan Murray, five-year deal, $140 million. Steve, how do you feel about both of those transactions for the Sacramento Kings?
I mean, number one, it was feeling a little weird that we were going to go into an NBA season with just no Russell Westbrook. Like, he's just not on the team, not playing. So I'm just happy that he's getting a chance to continue to play basketball and give the effort that he's given. So, you know, one of the all-time greats. So salute for that. Keegan Murray, keep your talent, keep your young guy, and let's see what happens. So, I mean, you don't want to mess around with it. Give him the bag. Let's move forward. Pretty straightforward to me. What say you? Are you down with the Kings court right now?
How excited were you to drop that on the pod?
I wrote that down at 6:30 this morning.
You know what? Fair enough. It's on the Keegan front, it's fine. Like, to your point, keep your young talent. And it's been like an interesting development trajectory with Keegan Murray so far in Sacramento, where he comes in like, okay, cool. We got this big forward that can shoot. Could put the ball on the floor a little bit. How can we build that out, et cetera? And the last 2 years have just kind of been like, so yeah, we need you to shoot. Also, can you be our best perimeter defender on top of that? And he's kind of been up for the challenge on that front. Like, I think Keon Ellis on balance is a better perimeter defender, but it's just like, oh, Keegan can defend and also shoot and move off the ball. The on-ball stuff, like, I don't, you know, sometimes he gets more rope to explore. Other times he just doesn't. So like, that's been interesting to me. And so locking him down certainly makes sense. 5-for-140 feels like a little bit steep as of like October 17th, but I also just believe in Keegan Murray. I think he is easily the brightest spot on that Kings roster. And if he is able to stay healthy and we see any sort of growth on ball in addition to the shooting, the cutting, some of the screening that he can sprinkle in, and then this defense on top of it, like, it's just going to be good. If not, he outplays it by the end of this deal.
Nikias Duncan, if he's not going to do nothing else, he's going to tap the on-ball Keegan Murray button. And let me just tell you, all he needs to do is get the three-point shot back. Because going from 41 to 34 probably isn't what Sacramento would want you to do. So if he can get that back and continue to give the effort defensively, I think the Kings will be okay with that. It can't just be, hey, I defend better. And also, don't worry, I can shoot. I will shoot. It will be fine. Can't be that.
you need both. The Russ, I guess because it's been telegraphed for months, like, I just don't have the energy to be annoyed by it or as annoyed by it as I could be. But it does just kind of like, well, to be clear, this is from the Kings' perspective. Like, to your point, I am glad that Russ is in the league. Let me make that very clear before I move forward. But like, to the Kings of it all, it's just like, Dennis Schroeder into Russell Westbrook while you already have like DeMar. Like, it's just, they objectively have talent, but I'm also like, how is this all going to gel together? And again, the Pacific division preview is going to be on the next episode, so we'll have deeper Kings thoughts on that front. But that's where I'm just kind of like, I'm happy for Russ. I don't know if I'm happy for the Kings, I guess would be the simplest way for me to put that. Just feels interesting right now. And so we'll get into Kings thoughts on the next episode of the pod. But shout out to Russ and shout out to Keegan.
if there are any Kings fans out there, that was what we call a director's cut trailer for Nakai's Duncan's thoughts on the Sacramento Kings. Please tune into the next episode, but enjoy this one.
Thank you, Steve. Other bit of news. Malcolm Brogdon signed with the New York Knicks a little bit earlier this offseason. I think it was more of like a training camp deal. Either way, signs with the New York Knicks. He has now officially announced his retirement. 9 seasons, 15-4-5 across those 9 seasons, 50% on twos, nearly 40% from three, 87% from the line. Former rookie of the year, former sixth man of the year. Just wanted to give the general salute to Malcolm Brogdon, who, if you remember, Steve, came into the league with very clear, this guy is talented, but also these medicals, I don't know how comfortable we are drafting him high because we just don't know what it's going to look like. And so for him to carve out the career that he did, made an impact on multiple good teams, showcase how talented he is. It just, it stinks that it's ending this early. But like, I'm also glad that he was able to build out at least this level of career for himself in light of like what the early medicals were and things like that. But the shooting, the driving, even some of the defense, at least early on in his career, was quality. This was just a really good guard and an important figure off the court as well. So just wanted to give the shout out to Malcolm Brogdon before we got into the previews.
I mean, he won Rookie of the Year. He won Sixth Man of the Year. He's one of two players to have won both. Shout out to Mike Miller. Had a heck of a career, and then hopefully he's at peace. I think that's the most important thing for me. Hopefully he's at peace with his decision. It's not easy to make those type of life decisions and pivot away, especially when you're still in it to a degree, to where you had an opportunity to make a roster, had an opportunity to make an impact, and you know, getting at that point where you decide, I'd like to transition into enjoying my family. It's not an easy one. So salute to Malcolm Brogdon.
So there you go. Just wanted to give the quick salute to Malcolm Brogdon. And now let's roll into division preview 1 of 2, Steve. We start with the Atlantic division. Same format as always. Top of the mind, top of the board. Last year's division winner, the Boston Celtics, coming off of a 61-21 season. They were second in offense, fourth in defense, second in net rating. A lot of offseason moves. Kristaps gone, Drew Holiday gone, Jason Tatum out for now, as he is very much recovering from his injury. We may see him at some point this season. But as of now, no Jason Tatum to start the year for the Boston Celtics. My excitement level, Steve, on a broader sense, is just a level of house money that they can kind of play with right now, since there is the no Tatum of it all early on. Peyton Pritchard's going to get after it. Jaylen Brown's going to get after it. All of these bigs are going to get after it, and I have more thoughts on that a little bit later in this segment. But they're just going to run and shoot threes and try their best to play defense. I do have some questions about what they want to land on defensively, scheme-wise. But teams are counting them out, and this is a locker room and certainly a head coach that kind of thrives on that part. So, like, I'm kind of excited for the general chaos of it all with this Boston group. What excites you about this group?
Joe Mazzulla. Joe Mazzulla is a madman. Joe Mazzulla said, bro, I don't even like preseason games. I just wish we could practice all the time. Joe Mazzulla told the media that, hey, just so you know, y'all not playing each other, y'all playing the coaches. Wynn got a haircut, then full court pressed them 157-4, and then used it as a moment of humanity in which they can humanize the competition and we can understand each other better instead of just being a moment where we're both trying to do our jobs. This man is a madman, and I'm excited to see what he does with this group. I don't know if they're going to have a set rotation. I don't know what they're going to do. But this team is going to get after it. They're going to compete, and there's a lot of opportunity out here for people. We can easily talk about what the Celtics were and what they tore down, but there is a lot of opportunity for a lot of these players on this roster to make an impact. And you can't sit here. I know Jaylen Brown loves Jason Tatum. You tell me he's not ready for this moment? You tell me Derek White's not ready for this moment? You tell me the bigs aren't ready to play? Chris Boucher's not ready to play and have an impact?
The revenge game for Chris Boucher last Wednesday.
They're going to run and get after it and compete, and there's low expectations. So there's a pot that I'm starting to believe in with the Boston Celtics. I don't know how many wins they get, but if you're telling me all this is together, this is a team that's going to get after it. I'm starting to buy it. And you add in the fact that Joe Mazzulla has been willing to play Anthony Simons and Peyton Pritchard together, and those two playing together has looked pretty good as far as them being able to flow off each other, driving kicks side to side. Both can be used on ball, off ball. You got pick and roll attacks. I'm intrigued by it all because they're going to have size. They're going to have multiple bigs. They're going to be able to attack. They're going to get threes up. Don't sleep on the Celtics.
Boy, are they going to get threes up. What was it, 17 threes for Derek White, as you mentioned him, in their most recent preseason game against Toronto? Like, it didn't feel like he was forcing a ton of them. This is just, all right, I'm open in transition. I'm open on the wing, catch and shoot. Oh, y'all are ducking under a little bit. Here's a pull-up. Like, this is the kind of growth that we've seen from him while he's been in Boston. So, didn't feel natural. He just has, to your point, Steve, more opportunity. And so, who snatches that and runs with it? It's going to be exciting to watch. biggest question for me, I guess biggest questions in that regard. One, when does Jason Tatum come back? Because it is now just very clear that he is going to make his return at some point. Where are the Celtics when he does?
I don't mean to cut you off, but I don't think he's, I don't see it.
Huh.
I hope he doesn't. Chill. Get it right. That's if you're, if you're at 150%, cool. But chill. They got this.
I think, you know, we are aligned in, hey, Jason, just relax. But everything that we have seen so far points to not only am I going to be back at some point, this might be early March for him. With the way that he's recovered and the way that he's pushed for, like, he's dunking already. Like, it just kind of lines up that he is going to try this. And the Celtics are going to have a tough time telling him no. I won't say it's impossible, but barring a setback, it's going to be tough to keep him off. So, like, I am just kind of wondering, when is that return? Is it actually going to be in early to mid-March? And if so, to our broader points about the excitement level around the Celtics group, where are they going to be if slash when Jason Tatum returns? Is this a we're 4 games over .500 and now Jason Tatum is the late season addition that now makes us the team no one wants to play in these two conference playoffs? Are they 2 games under .500 and then we get back to these conversations of, hey, Jason, we know you're ready. However, we maybe could finish like with like the 8th best lottery odds, and because these odds are flattened out, now we're adding somebody we have no business adding to this roster right now. So how about you just sit down for a little bit? But like, I'm curious to see like what that part of it's going to be. And to the actual, like, on-court product early on, who pops in the big room? Is it going to be Nemi Osikeda? Is it going to be Luka Garza? Is it going to be, my favorite is Xavier Tillman. I make no bones about that. Is it going to be Xavier Tillman? Who snatches this starting role? Is it going to be Chris Boucher, to your earlier mention? Who snatches this and just becomes the big that Joe Mazzulla trusts the most? Those would probably be my two baseline questions that I have for Boston.
Well, I think that part gets interesting. It kind of ties into my question, so I'll bounce off of it. I think this is going to be a lot of experimentation. I think Joe Mazzulla had a quote. It's funny you said the word chaos. He talked about trying to find some level of controlled chaos. And so I don't know if we're going to get one person that locks it down. I think it is going to be situational. I can imagine this being a team that runs 10, 11 guys for a little bit. Depending on the situation, depending on what they need, depending on what's happening on the court, depending on what you do on the court, guys are going to be in and out. So that is part of the question. Who grabs the moment and who secures their minutes? Because we probably, you know, you trust that Derek White, Peyton Pritchard, Jaylen Brown, Hauser, Simons, insert big are all going to be locked in, right? Mm-hmm. That's only an X amount of players. So we're going to see which wings show up every single night and make an impact. Whether it's driving or on defense. I think all the bigs are going to have an opportunity because they do a little bit of something different. So there's a versatility that they have, but will that become a consistency that gets them through? You know, we know Kata can roll. Does the defense pop? Does now he elevate? Xavier Tillman, we know what he can do. Can he knock down shots? Is he going to be switchable? Luka Garza, the effort that he gives. Is it going to be a night-to-night basis? Is it going to be an energy basis deal? Is it going to be we need this tonight? That's where I think the intrigue comes. That's what Boston's going to have to build out. I think there are blocks that they have where they know they want certain combinations, but it's going to be fluid. It's going to be based on what they need, who's getting it done for us. Are we defending at a high level? Are we moving the ball? Are we taking the shots we need to? How do they consistently get that? Because the compete level is going to be there, but you got to make sure you have talent emerging every single night. So as the season goes on, as teams get more tape on you, are you prepared for what they throw at you? Is your rotation set in a way that's going to set you up for success? That's where it gets interesting for me. So that's probably my biggest question mark. I know they're going to try hard. I know they're going to move the ball offensively. I know they're going to shoot threes. Can you do it on the nights where you're not knocking those down? You know, are these, because you're a different Boston Celtics team, are you now giving up transition points and now you're down 10, can't fight your way back? Like, they're going to have to navigate some of these things throughout the season, but I'm intrigued.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I'm right there with you. I guess in that vein, Steve, who is your X Factor or breakout candidate for this group?
I mean, with all my heart, I wanted to say Anfernee Simons, but I feel like he's graduated from this category. I mean, he's just a really good basketball player. I think they need his scoring and his pop, and he's going to be empowered to be aggressive and make plays. So I am intrigued by that. I mean, it feels like pick a wing, but again, I don't know the rotation. So I'm going to go Nemus Kata.
Okay.
I think if he's able to just consistently have an impact, especially on the defensive end of the floor, if that's going to level up a little bit, I think his athleticism, the roles, he's going to play around people with shooting and space. If he can make short roll passes, I think that gives Boston a little bit stronger base. So I'm going to go Kata.
Okay. I think that's fair. Like, the one general thing I'd say about this Boston big group is that it helps that they're all good screeners at the very least. So, like, there is a pathway to offensive impact no matter if, like, if Boucher is hitting his threes or not, or if Xavier Tillman's knocking down shots or not. At the very least, there is a level of we are going to help the best guys and create openings that I think is just going to be pretty consistent throughout the year. So, to your point, if Kate is able to level up defensively, he has, I imagine he's going to get the first crack at, like, securing, again, the most trust. Not necessarily he is the big all the time, but at the very least, Joe Mazzulla is going to have his name top of the list. For me, I did have Anfernee Simons down. Like, he just factors in as an important figure for this Boston group. You mentioned the shooting, the pull-up shooting in particular. I want to see how much of the driving button he taps into, because he is someone that can get downhill and can put some fun finishes, and has put some fun finishes on film, rather. He's going to have to find the right blend of I can take these threes within the ethos, and I kind of have to be the guy that jump starts some of these swing sequences for this group without Jason Tatum, because I don't think I guess within that, I am curious to see how much two on the ball Jaylen Brown gets this year. He is clearly the best guy for them offensively. Is that a coverage that he sees more of by virtue of that and having no Jason Tatum? But like Anfernee Simons could be another guy, especially when we get into like second units and stuff like that. He is another guy that can draw that type of attention. So I'm curious to see like how he balances that. And then the other part is just, to your point, the bigs is what I have in my notes. Like, goes back to my biggest question, like which one of them pops? I am once again planting my flag on Xavier Tillman Island. But if one of those pops, it makes things make a lot more sense for this Boston group.
Is it an island?
Yes.
Okay. Could it be one of like Josh Minot, Jordan Walsh, Hugo Gonzalez? Could it just be one of them?
Good.
Is that the bit? Okay.
Sure, good. Get into some more smaller lineups with a group. I'd be intrigued by that. I guess related to that, Steve, what do you think Boston's best lineup is going to be?
Give me Derek White, Peyton Pritchard, Jaylen Brown. Give me Sam Hauser. Give me Nemus Kata.
That is sickening. That is the lineup that I have for Boston's best group. So, shout out to the Dunkin' Pot podcast. All right, Steve, what is the lineup you most want to see from this Boston group?
Ooh. Give me Derek White. Give me Peyton Pritchard. Give me Anfernee Simons. Give me Jaylen Brown. Give me Nemus Kata.
I was about to lose my darn marbles. Okay, so I have the first four. I have Xavier Tillman instead of Kata. But okay, I'm glad that we are viewing this Boston group very, very similarly. So there we go. All right, Steve, as we are super aligned on the Boston Celtics, let's see if we are similarly aligned with the New York Knicks. Coming off of a 51-31 season, they were fifth in offense, 13th in defense, 8th in net rating, new head coach, some tweaks around the margins on the roster. And so actually, I will start with you with this one, Steve. What are you most excited about when it comes to the New York Knicks?
What is what Mike Brown envisions do for the New York Knicks overall? What does this open up? How does more pace and more tempo and more movement and more dribble handoffs and more space to drive, how does that make them better offensively? Can they empower the entire group to where we know what Jalen Brunson can do night in, night out? We know the dynamic threat of Karl Anthony Towns. Does this allow Mikal Bridges, OG Anunoby to initiate more, to have more of an impact, to get in the paint, to force teams to rotate to them, to where now those two are getting kickouts as opposed to being the ones that are creating all of the offense? Can they now be more random? Can they get the ball up quicker in the court? So for me, it's not just transition opportunities for the Knicks. It's just the idea that they're going to make quicker decisions in the half court. They're going to get up, and it's not going to take 10 seconds for them to get into their first action, their first set, they're going to be able to kind of get the ball side to side. So now Jalen Brunson's in a second side action, or Mikal Bridges now getting a pass and cut action. OG Anunoby's pass and cut. There's different ways they can do that. So what does that do to help them? And I think the positive for New York coming off the years they've had, they do have a defensive base. So it's not like they're going to lose all of their defense. So if they're able to get after it defensively, get some easy ones to transition, and now we become tough to guard in the half court, that's probably the formula. That's what you want to see. And mix that in with the ability to execute in the half court. We still have the Jalen Brunson ISOs or pick and roll that you have to deal with if we need a bucket in a tough moment. So can they find that right balance? Can they find that right blend? And can they get it early? Because I think if you get off to a hot start, especially in this Eastern Conference, a lot of opportunity, a lot of teams striving for it, but you set yourself up for success, just like we saw with Cleveland last year. So can they get that going? But I'm excited to see the attempt and what it looks like.
I am right there with you. Top of the loads for me, Mike Brown's offensive tweaks. And like, I was thinking about this a lot yesterday as I was trying to, you know, we're eventually going to be releasing some like site-wide, like award predictions, stuff like that. So I was thinking a lot about Coach of the Year. And I was just like, how is Mike Brown going to factor into this? Like, could it be a similar situation like Kenny Atkinson last year, where you're taking over a good team, but there was just a very obvious leak. Like, I think they went from like 17th in offense to flirting with the best offensive rating in NBA history last year. And it's like, yeah, the Cavs were still good and they were better, but like there's a very noticeable leap here that people can point to. And I was like, is there a pathway to Mike Brown having something like that? Considering, as I mentioned at the top, the Knicks were fifth in offense last year. And so like, what would that look like? That's how the thought started for me yesterday. But just bouncing off of what you said, like for me, I am more focused on what do these tweaks do for Mikal Bridges and OG Anunoby in particular? Because as we've known, there have been plenty of conversations, some accepted, some denied, et cetera, with OG Anunoby dating back to like the end of the Toronto run. He wants more on his plate offensively. He wants more usage. Mikal Bridges has shown, I am fine being cutter, early offense, screener, spot up, threat, drive, closeout. Gets to Brooklyn, it's like, oh, he's running a bunch of pick and rolls. These middies are falling. These three-pointers are falling. He has more on the tank. And last year was, it felt up and down for both of them in terms of the usage. And so if you do have more of an emphasis of getting the ball up early, and just in general, you know, something that we talked about in our preseason takeaway episode a couple weeks ago, you see Jalen Brunson and Karl-Anthony Towns spaced on the same side of the floor, and they're running action elsewhere. And it's like, okay, how many of those opportunities is Mikal getting? How many of those opportunities is OG Anunoby getting? What do they do with that kind of runway? And to your point, how does that make life easier for those stars? Because you can always get back to leaning into those stars. So like, I am just excited to see what does Mikal Bridges getting back to consistent form offensively look like? What does OG Anunoby do with more of an offensive runway early in possessions? And so like that's kind of where it starts for me. And obviously that's within the broader scope of what Mike Brown is bringing to this group.
Well, I mean, just to add to that quickly, this also opens up more movement for Karl-Anthony Towns to where he can get receive screens and be a pressure point. They've really emphasized clearing space, wing cuts, and trying to use that to drive. And so that can give you a good base. And then this could also open up things for the bench and allow them to have something that they can flow into and play with, where it's not just, okay, we need to strictly one pick and roll because we're only out here for X amount of minutes. So a lot of intrigue there.
Got you. And then quickly bounce off of that before getting into the questions, because you mentioned Cat getting more off-ball screens, and that kind of gets into, and I'm sorry to annoy you this early in the morning, keeping an eye on the Karl-Anthony Towns three-point volume, because last year was the first time he averaged under 5 in 4 seasons, and he is too good of a shooter for that to be the bit. And so if he is going to be off-ball more, again, OG, Mikal initiating more, they're getting the kicks, as you mentioned. Can we get more threes up for Cat when he's just one of the best shooting bigs ever? He can do more than that offensively, but can we get that up? Like, I think that just feels like low-hanging fruit to me. But okay, I want to continue to do the podcast. I don't want Steve to leave, so we'll leave it there. Steve, what is your biggest question or biggest questions heading into the season for the Knicks?
Can the defense be consistently good, and can you add scheme versatility? I think last year I was a big believer in the Knicks defense because of the talent they had with OG Anunoby and Mikal Bridges and Josh Hart, and just being able to fly around and get after it. They have some, you know, obviously the Cat Mitchell Robinson lineup where they can get some rim protection. But how much can you build up to prepare yourself for the playoffs? Are you going to be able to have an answer for Jalen Brunson and Kat in pick and roll together? We've seen in the preseason Kat being in switches more. We've seen Mitchell Robinson being in switches more. Can they develop something that they trust? I think that's an important part for a team defensively. You don't have to necessarily hit it out of the park every single time. You just need to be good enough to A, know what you want to do as a team so you understand where your flaws are. B, do it well enough to where, okay, we have to do something else. This is not giving us the opening we need every single time. And so it's going to be on them to figure out, okay, when Jalen Brunson's put in action, what are we going to do? When it's those, him and Kat, what are we going to do? We have different lineups up there. What are we going to do? So I want to see, like, I believe in the defense, and I think they've gotten after it at times in the preseason. But ultimately, for them to hit the highest ceiling that a lot of people believe they can, it's going to have to be something that they nail every time.
Okay. I'm right there with you. Like, for me, what I had in my notes is Kat prepared to be solid defensively? Because we have seen in his career, like, when he is locked in, he can be at the level. He can hang with the occasional late switch. So to your overall scheme versatility point, a lot of that is going to be like, how much is Kat ready to have on his plate? At different points of his career, we've seen good drop stuff from him, particularly early in the Minnesota tenure. We've seen the at the level stuff where I think it is just his best coverage at this point. Late switches. We have also seen when all three of those have gone backwards and teams have put up in action. And so, like, can you just be a 7 out of 10 every time and sprinkle in some 10 reps? Because if you could do that, we can hang with the 5s or 4s on random possessions. It just can't fluctuate the way that we saw it last year and that we've seen in some years past. He is the level, they're going to be very good. And I think they have the personnel to be a top 10 defense. They were 13th last year in the midst of all this stuff with Kat, with Mikal Bridges, who did not look like himself at the beginning of the year defensively, was still fine, but it wasn't flirting with all defensive teams like we've seen in years past. And they were still flirting with a top 10 defensive rating. So any kind of leveling between those two in particular gets them right there. At least in theory, it should. So the defense is certainly the thing for me. And then offensively.
Oh well, I was going to add to your Kat defense point. I think We also have to keep an eye on what it looks like when he's on the weak side. So the positive of the double big lineup is something we're always going to talk about, but this now puts him in a position where he's low man, weak side defender. He's got to help. He's one pass away if they go to a post up. So can he hit those notes as well? Continue with your offensive point. My fault.
Oh, no, you're good. You're good. I love that you added that part in. I was just going to say quickly to the offensive point, as Mike Brown's introducing some different spacing alignments, in general wants to juice the pace, they want to juice the movement, and juice the ball movement in particular. How consistent is that going to be? Because even after that first preseason game, my round's like, okay, this is cool. We still got a long way to go. So for me, it's just more of a basic, when do they hit their level? When do they kind of hit nirvana in terms of how fast they want to play, how much they want to move the ball? Because they do also have some guys. Jalen Brunson, as good as he is, he can be catch and holdy sometimes. OG can be catch and holdy sometimes. Kat can be catch and holdy sometimes. They're clearly talented enough to work within this kind of system that influences this kind of movement and stuff. So like, it's less ability. It is just more, if it is within the first month and teams are just being physical off the ball and they're switching a bunch, like, how often do we see some of the, like, breaks in possession where it's just like, okay, I know you're going to switch this next action we're supposed to flow into. I'm just going to attack now because I have space and I feel good about it. And so, like, when do they hit that kind of ideal level of flow is something that I have in the back of my head.
Well, I think that's something Mike Brown is really looking to address, considering he was out there saying, I'm trying not to have them run a lot of sets right now. I need them to get this part down so we can flow and play out of it. And I think that's going to be important, especially for them being a team that eventually teams are going to land on, we're putting X player on Kat or we're switching a lot of these things. So now learning how to play outside of the play becomes a key function for the Knicks, and being able to have that base of moving the ball, driving kick, working with space. If they can establish that, I think that gives them a better base going up against things that they're going to end up facing down the line.
Absolutely. Absolutely. With that, Steve, who's your X factor for this group, or who are your breakout candidates for this Knicks team?
Miles McBride.
Yep.
He's my early sixth man of the year. I think Mike Brown plus scoring guard usually produces results. I think there's an opportunity for a Deuce McBride to get him up this year and be an energy impact player. And we know he'll get after it defensively. So that's the guy for me. If there's going to be space and he can get downhill, he's going to get the opportunity. That's the one. Now, I will give a salute to my forever X Factor, Josh Hart. Didn't do it this year, but salute. I am intrigued with the Jordan Clarkson of it all.
Okay.
I know he's going to win them a couple games in the Garden. I can already hear it now. He's also going to shoot the ball. I can also hear that now. So if they both are like a combo off the bench, I'm going to be very intrigued, but I'm keeping an eye on it.
Okay. I like it. I like it. I also had Deuce in my notes. I had Josh Hart as like my preseason sixth man of the year pick, but I would not at all be upset by a Deuce McBride run. I think he's good. He deserves more playing time. I want to see him and Jalen Brunson log more minutes together. We'll get there, but I like the shout there. Since you've already mentioned Deuce, I'll go to my front court. Mitchell Robinson, if you're going to be the starter, stay out of foul trouble, make your free throws, because everything else, you're going to screen like crazy. You're going to kill the offensive glass. You're going to be one of the best rim protectors on the planet. I've seen it. I trust it. Just has to stay on the floor enough and make enough free throws to where it's tenable for Mike Brown to feel comfortable continuing to go to it. That's where I met with Mitchell Robinson. Go ahead.
Well, I'm glad you brought up Mitchell Robinson, because I was concerned a little bit about all these high pick and rolls with Mitchell Robinson.
Because it's
it's a long roll for Mitchell Robinson. But I will say, to your point, he has made up for that with making sure I get a piece of you and you have to go over, which will now allow me to get these two steps I need to get to the short roll. So,
yeah. So he is firmly good. Just want him to stay healthy. Had a healthy offseason, I believe. So want to stay healthy, make free throws, stay out of foul trouble. He's going to be an impact player if he does. That is just that. That's it. Gershon Yabusele would be the other guy that I would add here. One of my favorite offseason additions, league-wide, had himself a quality season in Philadelphia, shot well from three. He's also going to screen. He's also going to dive. He'll also muck it up on the offensive glass. Can defend a little bit of everyone 3-5. If we do reach a point where Mike Brown's like, okay, we need more cat at the five, I think first crack naturally will be Josh Hart because we just saw him start. Second crack is going to be Gershon Yabusele. And if he's able to continue to hit threes, I'm in, Steve. I'm in. I am in. So I would keep an eye on Yabu. That's why I'll leave it there.
Okay. I respect it.
It's lineup time. It's lineup time. What do you think the Knicks' best lineup is going to be?
Jalen Brunson, Mikal Bridges, OG Anunoby, Josh Hart, and Karl-Anthony Towns.
Okay. For me, Jalen Brunson, Deuce McBride, Mikal Bridges, OG Anunoby, Karl-Anthony Towns. Plus 7 in 49 minutes, that minute count has to go up much higher than what it was last year. And I think Mike Brown will do it. So,
man.
I need it. What's the lineup you most?
Nikai's dipping into that net rating again. Oh, hey, my.
Hey, it got me yelled at about Aaron Holiday, but it's all right. What's the lineup you most want to see from this Knicks group?
Deuce McBride, Jalen Brunson, Jordan Clarkson, Josh Hart, Mitchell Robinson.
Oh, my. Oh, my. All of the three buckets guard. And Mitchell Robinson, get yours off the glass. That's fire. for me, it's Jalen Brunson plus size. Jalen Brunson, Mikal Bridges, OG Anunoby, Karl-Anthony Towns, Mitchell Robinson. 67 minutes last year. Again, would like to see a larger sample of that if we can. But that just seems like a lot of fun to me. You got multiple screening partners for Jalen Brunson. Again, defensively, pick on him if you want to. You just got everyone. If you want to put Brunson and Cat in action together, one, you got to make sure you screen Jalen Brunson clean or it's just going to be an offensive foul. But beyond that, it's OG, Mikal, and Mitchell Robinson on the back end of that. So that's where I would go. So those are your Celtics. Those are your Knicks. We're going to take a quick break here. And once we return, we're going to round out the Atlantic Division. And we are back. We're going to continue with the Atlantic Division preview. It is now time to talk about the Toronto Raptors, Steve, coming off of a 30-52 season. Not what you want. 26th in offense, 15th in defense. They were very good post-All-Star break. 24th in net rating on the year. And I think for me, I am most excited about watching this Raptors group, when healthy at the very least. I'm excited to watch this Raptor group play defense. This is going to be a high pickup point team. It's going to be a three-quarter quarter and sometimes a full-court pressure defense. I think with Jakob Poeltl at center, there's a level of scheme versatility that can tap into. I think Scotty Barnes, certainly last year before he went down, was more locked in on that end than we had seen him in years prior, at least consistently locked in. He performed at an all-defense caliber level to me last year before going down. I think you have that kind of front court and some of the length that they could toss out elsewhere. Some of the ball pressure guys they could toss in off the bench, Jamal Shedd, Jacoby Walter, who's been fun. I am going to enjoy watching this team defend. That can't be the entire boat, but it can be a foundation for them. I'm just ready to see this team get after it. I think that's where my excitement level starts for me with the Raptors. What say you, good sir?
Okay, well, we're going to circle back to the defense because that is one of my questions, so it kind of flows together. But for me, it's how they build this out offensively. And I think being able to have Jakob Poeltl and play off of him is interesting to me because they have, and look at that starting lineup of Emmanuel Quickley, RJ Barrett, Brandon Ingram, Scotty Barnes, they have talent. So if you're going side to side and you have actions on both sides and you're using different people as screeners, you're making the defense move and you're getting those guys into dribble handoffs, getting them downhill in different ways, you can keep pressure on defenses in a different way. And so watching them kind of work through that, I think if they build the boat out correctly, it's going to be good because you can also do that with your bench guys. You can blend your lineups because you have four talented players in the starting lineup. So you can have different guys out there playing and operating in different ways. But how they kind of keep their flow up and keep pressure on teams, and can RJ Barrett get downhill consistently? What's Emmanuel Quickley look like this year? Is the pull-up threat going to go? Is he going to add some more playmaking? I think Brandon Ingram's shot making is going to be impactful for the Raptors. As far as I can get to my spot, I can rise up. I will take these shots. Don't worry about it. And now mixing in more pull-up threes, more catch-and-shoot threes. And then the Scotty Barnes of it all, as far as being able to diagnose and make different plays in different spots, you can move them around the floor. So I think offensively, for me, if they can just be consistent on that end, buy into sharing the ball together, and keep pressure on teams, I'm intrigued.
Okay, I like it. I'd say, just to your point, like, as we've seen in the Darko era, honestly, like, I think the concepts offensively for Toronto are pretty sound. It is just getting the talent in the door that makes them pop. And now that you have a new group, like, we didn't get to see Brandon Ingram. He was traded for last year. We didn't get to see him last year. Now it is just the chemistry building process. What are we running and when? Where are guys going to be spaced? When we do go to the second side, who's there? That kind of thing. Working out the kinks are going to be fun. So I'm right there with you, Steve. I am right there with you. Biggest question that you have for the Toronto Raptors this year is now your time to talk about the defense.
Is that defense going to be consistent? Because I like it. I like, you know, moments where we see in Toronto where they are flying around the preseason. They are getting after it. You're seeing double teams. You're seeing rotations. You're seeing activity. All that's fantastic. You need a base to make that work throughout a regular season. And when I say a base, it's not necessarily schematic, right? So it's not Jakob Poeltl being able to be at the level or in drop. It's the little things. Can you keep the ball in front? Are you navigating screens? Are you giving up drives? Because if you give up a drive and now your defense based on activity has to come help, that's a kick. Now you drive and close out. That's another help and recover. Can you limit those type of plays? If you're going to go full court pressure, that's fine. Are you ready for high screens? Are you ready for blow-bys? Are you built into those things? Are your rotations going to be consistent in pick and roll to where the low man's in or a team's able to skip pass? And now do they beat that closeout? So I think for me, it's just making sure you have those things consistently done. And I think, to your point, we could have some fun, but I would need to see that consistently night in, night out from the Raptors. They have the pieces, they have the depth, but for them to do what they need to do, the defense has to hit at a certain level.
No, I think that's fair. And we saw that in their most recent preseason game against Boston, where they were getting dinged early. I think some of that was they were trying to find some things offensively, and there was just a lot of transition for Boston. But to your point, if you can't contain early, you got to rotate early. And that's a lot of pressure to put on a defense just in general. I think the counter to that counter, I guess, is that because Toronto just has so many dudes, like, the stamina of it all may not hit them like it would hit other teams. But, like, to your point, like, the base is obviously going to be very important for this group. So I think that is fair. In my notes, Steve, the first thing I have typed out is Scotty Barnes, period, for biggest question. Talked about the defense, and I think offensively, a guy that can bully mismatches, a guy that's a very good passer, guy that can do the dirty work on the offensive glass as well. You are going to be annoyed by me, but I am keeping an eye on the process of Scotty Barnes offensively. I think there is one side where, as mentioned a little bit earlier, how he is schemed open, how he is schemed up is going to be important. There has to be a balance between what he does, where he gets his touches, how many touches he gets in light of implementing Brandon Ingram into this. Some of this is going to be on coaching. The other part of this is going to be on Scotty. It has been a lot of jumpers for him over the last calendar year. He needs that growth as a self-creator, and it was understandable, especially last year as the team was not very good. We get into the preseason. It has been a lot of jumpers, and he has not made many of them. And so for me, it's just like the regular season is starting. I think everyone in Raptors media at this point has cited the Scotty saying last year was about experimentation, quote, et cetera. So I won't hang there too long. The Raptors folks have already done it. Once the real games, the quote unquote real games start, how often is he putting his head down? When he gets the ball at 17 feet, how often is that possession ending at 10 versus ending at 5 versus ending at 17 again? If we get head down aggressive Scotty Barnes, he's an all-star this year, flat out. If he is healthy and we get head down Scotty Barnes in addition to the playmaking and the defense, he is just going to be an all-star. Or at the very least, there's going to be an episode of Dunker Spot in February where we're talking about the all-star selections and I am spending 5 minutes ranting about him not making it. If it's going to be bad process Scotty Barnes, he may still get box score numbers. It is going to be an underwhelming experience and the conversation around him is going to be uncomfortable. And I don't want that for him or the Raptors. So that's probably where it starts for me. Man, which version of Scotty Barnes are we going to get?
Man, Scotty Barnes trying to work on his mid-range and we got to here? Jeez.
It's cool. It's just like, hey, we got to get it in moderation because he hasn't made enough of them to like bend defenses yet. So it's just like, what is the balance between I need this to unlock other things, as you consistently say on this podcast?
Well, I was just about to say it. No. He's trying to get this mid-range going so that I can open up some more of these drives, and I got both of them going. Let him cook.
Okay. You just got to hope defenses aren't willing to let him cook. That's all I'm saying. I just want a good balance for him. That's all I want. He is incredibly talented. Incredibly good. But it just, let's find a better balance. That's all I'm saying. And then beyond that, to your earlier point about them finding things offensively, just how quickly is it going to gel? You've already hit on the major points. So I won't hang there too long. But it's the Scotty of it all. And how does the offense get going? Who are your breakout candidates for this Raptors group?
Well, I'm going to do it again, Nekias.
Okay.
Give me Ochai Agbaji.
You are a very big fan of Ochai Agbaji, who has just been good as a Raptor, so it's fair, but...
Give me the threes, give me the defense, mix in some drives, let's have some fun.
Okay. Well, I think for me, the two names that I have now, Emmanuel Quickley, who's probably just coming off of the quietest 17-6 season you've ever seen, but defense has to hold up. I think if you were getting into any kind of inverted action with Brandon Ingram or Scotty Barnes as a handler, he's got to hit people on some of these. He can't ghost out of all of them. So keep an eye on that. He has been a floater king since he's been in the NBA, but he does have to hit a certain level of those if he's not going to get all the way to the rim and pressure defenses that way. Yeah, you just need him to be good and impactful. Like, he's clearly talented, can knock down threes, can do soft movement. Like, Emmanuel Quickley is a quality guard. You just want the high impact season for him so the Raptors can actually hit their ceiling. So eye on him. And then Grady Dick, I'll just toss the name in here, because you want the three-point shooting to match the reputation. Like, the actual usage within the offense certainly fits that. I know he's a talented shooter. He was one of the more efficient mid-range scorers that we had in the league last year quietly. And so, like, just ideally, very basic note, but, like, I would like to get the 38% from 3 year from Grady this year. And obviously you want him to hold up defensively as well because he has the size to help unlock another level of lineup versatility for Toronto. So hold up defensively, hit a higher clip of threes. I think that could change some things for Toronto this year and certainly help with the gelling of the offense overall. With that, Steve, what do you think Toronto's best lineup is going to be?
Starting lineup. Quickly, okay. Barrett, Ingram, Barnes, Poeltl.
Okay. I have once again probably thought too much about this. And I'm just like, you know, heading in, I mean, year one of star four plus star four is generally the team performs better when they're split apart, at least early on. So I do think the best version of the Raptors lineup wise is going to be either Brandon Ingram led unit or Scottie Barnes led unit. And then just kind of cycling through some of the lineup stuff from last year. It's like, okay, what is the foundation of what a Scotty plus lineup looks like, et cetera. So last year, I think it was Davion Mitchell, Oshai Abaji, RJ Barrett, Scottie Barnes, Jakob Poeltl. They were like plus 30 in 55 minutes or something ridiculous like that. It's like, okay, small sample, yada, but outline of guard that doesn't need touches but can hit a spot up in pressure defensively, et cetera. RJ's there to play off of Scotty. Jakob Poeltl is going to be on the floor because he is just good and important and has been since he's been in Toronto. So, like, all right, those three are going to be on the floor. Landed on Jacoby Walter, Oshai Abaji, RJ Barrett, Scottie Barnes, Jakob Poeltl is what I think their best lineup is going to be this year.
Okay.
A lot of the offense is going to be ran through Scottie, but that's a lot of size around them, cutting, defense, all the things. You can also use Poeltl as a hub. I think that's where it's going to be. Related to that, what is the lineup you most want to see from the Toronto Raptors? Starting lineup. Yeah. We do just need to see Brandon Ingram and Scottie Barnes together. For me, Steve, Emmanuel Quickley, RJ Barrett, Grady Dick, Brandon Ingram, Scottie Barnes. Do we get any Scottie at the five? That's the lineup I want to see if we do get some Scottie at the five. It is now time to continue to annoy you, Steve. Just kidding. But it is now time to move to the Brooklyn Nets, a team that I am excited about. I would say a team that you do not have the same excitement level as I do, likely because of where they're likely going to end up in the standings.
What do you mean? Don't put that on me.
I've had conversations with you. No, but
I'm not the 15 out of 10 that you are. I'm just regular level excited about the Brooklyn Nets.
That's all I was still saying. Work there. I know. Kind of. I'm aware. I'm not saying you hate them. I'm just saying I know my excitement level for this group is probably irrational in light of where they're likely going to land in the standings. But I am very excited to watch this Nets.
Yes, game. Yes. Now inform the people of the Nets. Go ahead.
There we go. Coming off of a 26-56 season last year, 26th in offense, 23rd in defense, 26th in net rating. My excitement level, Steve, starts with this defense. If we're talking full court pressure, the Nets are going to have it, especially once they get into the second unit. When you get Zaire Williams on the floor and when you get Jalen Wilson on the floor, they're going to pressure the heck out of folks. And then you get into the half court, and ideally you get like Nick Claxton, with just a healthy Nick Claxton. The back is fine, et cetera. He's moving and grooving again. One of the most versatile defenders that we have in the front court in the NBA. Ball pressure plus Nick Claxton doing a little bit of everything just screams fun. And Jordy will also just toss out some nonsense at times. On top of that, this defense is going to be exciting. I already made the bold prediction when I was on the KOC pod. I made the comp to, I think it was like the 21 or the 22 Thunder, where like for the first like 2-3 months of the season, they were a top 10 defense, and then trades and they shut everybody down. They were back in the lottery again. I was like, yeah, the first 2 months of the season, the Nets are going to be a top 10 defense. That was my bold prediction on that pod. I will also say it on this pod. I think early in the season, they're going to be good defensively. Not going to say they're going to be good as a team, but I think the defense is going to pop early on. So I'll be prepared to take the L if not, but that's where my excitement level is with this Brooklyn defense.
There's a lot of excitement level. There's some key words you said there as they get to the second unit. This is a lot of minutes from Michael Porter Jr. and Cam Thomas. And so we're going to see how you navigate the defense with those two playing a heavy load of minutes. Yeah, we'll keep an eye on it.
I was just going to say before you go, Cam's been kind of plucky off ball so far in preseason. We'll see. He got to sustain it. I know. But it's like, okay, effort level is there. That's the first step. Continue.
I want to see what it looks like with Michael Porter Jr. and Cam Thomas unleashed offensively in the first unit. What do they do? What does it look like? How do defenses treat them? Michael Porter Jr. is probably going to be willing to shoot, going to be putting more actions, going to be able to do more things. That's going to be interesting. Cam Thomas is playing for a whole lot this season. That's going to be very interesting. Nick Claxton likely wants redemption. So I want to see what those three do on the offensive end of the floor.
I think that's fair. That leads into the biggest question segment. And for me, bouncing off what you just said, Steve, what does this team do against switches in the non-Cam division? Because I think the answer for Cam Thomas is I am getting a bucket anyway because I elevate over all of you and I can just score. Everybody else, Michael Porter Jr., are you ready to dribble against switches? Or are you also just going to be a shoot over the top guy? He can be that since he's 6'10 with the release point. everybody else? I don't know. And that's where it kind of falls apart, and where I am excited about the Nets and their youth and their defense. And I am not pressing the Nets are going to be in the play-in conversation, because I am very worried about what this offense looks like against switches.
It's
a little concerning.
I mean, I think they're just going to continue to move the ball. I think with under Jordy, they've tried to continue to go from side to side and find whatever mm-hmm. they can. They're going to, you know, I mean, they will grind you until they find something. So it'll be interesting to see how they do it. I think for me, it's just, what does the rotation end up looking like? Is there clear pathways for people to operate, or is this just going to be a night in, night out? What do we need? You're kind of cooking, now you're not type deal. Like, I want to see who the people are chosen at first and how they produce and what that looks like going forward.
That's fair. I guess I'd quickly amend, like, I guess less what does it look like against switches and more like how effective will they be against switches? Because to your point, this is a very good ball and body movement squad under Jordy. So I trust they will search out things. Just Artie's going to be a lot of contested shots late because it's taken a lot of work to get there. It's more of my broader point. But okay. Breakout / X factor for the Nets, Steve. Who you got?
In the whole team breakout candidate?
I mean, kind of.
Give me Zaire Williams. I still believe.
Listen, the defense was there last year. He just has to hit shots. That's kind of the big thing for him. It's what it was in Memphis. It's what it is here. But I like him, man. He has that defense for sure. For me, like, honestly, any of the point guards that they drafted, like, I don't like putting X factor breakout on rookies for very obvious reasons, because they just get the feet wet. But like, if there is a world in which the Nets like earnestly overperform through the first like half of the season or something like that, it is going to be because like Ben Saraf was good, or Nolan Treuer is good, or it just any of the young guys that they drafted pop in a way that they weren't expected to early. So there's that. Aside from that, like, Terrence Mann, I feel it's going to be pretty important, at least early on in this group. Like, if we're talking about redemption or any kind of bouncing back, I think the cutting and the ball movement, he's going to fit right into that. Defensively, he's going to take on tough assignments, especially assuming he's going to start. And who they're going to have out on the perimeter and the starting group at the very least, like, a lot's going to be on his plate. If he handles that, I feel even better about my first 2 months top 10 defense prediction. If Terrence Mann's able to hold four, because like, there is still just like size around all of that. So I'd say Terrence Mann among the quote unquote veteran group is kind of where I go, since I've already mentioned Nick Claxton. What do you think the best lineup is going to be for this group?
I'm going to give you both at the same time. I'm going to go with Cam Thomas, Terrence Mann, Zaire Williams, Michael Porter Jr., Nick Claxton.
Okay. I think it's going to be Cam plus bench. And so I went Cam Thomas, Zaire Williams, Terrence Mann, Noah Clowney, Dayron Sharpe. Which, very intriguing preseason for Noah Clowney so far. And Dayron Sharpe, just one of the more underrated backup bigs we have in the league. So I think that lineup will eat against like hybrid second units. And you said you gave both at the same time. Lineup I most want to see: Cam Thomas, Terrence Mann, Michael Porter Jr. Give me some Danny Wolf, get some passing, invert the offense a little bit. Nick Claxton, because the Danny plus MPJ defense and even the Cam defense is a lot, and you're going to need Nick Claxton out there for that. But I at least want to see it, is where I go with Brooklyn. And with that, it is now time to talk about everyone's favorite team, the Philadelphia 76ers. The team that we all have a handle on because we all know what to expect from the 76ers. Am I right? But coming off of last season, 24-58, injury-riddled year, 23rd in offense, 26th in defense, 25th in net rating. Some movement around the margins, but their biggest acquisitions are going to be their stars getting healthy at some point. We will at some point see Joel Embiid. We will see Paul George, in addition to Tyrese Maxey. And honestly, like, that's kind of where it starts for me in terms of the excitement level. Can we just get their best players on the floor, as simplistic as that sounds? Joel Embiid is a world of story when he's healthy. Paul George was not himself last year. And hopefully he's going to be closer to looking like that this year. Tyrese Maxey is incredibly good. And before he went down, made some real strides as a playmaker, I felt like. And so what the next step for him within this context looks like is going to be of major intrigue for me as well. But yeah, I just want to see the guys. I just want to see the guys, Steve. What excites you most about the Sixers?
What do they pivot to in year two of this quote-unquote experiment? Obviously, you need Joel Embiid, you need Paul George, but they need a stronger base, because after those two went down last year, all the injuries just didn't have much behind it. So you've seen more of an emphasis on drive and kick, trying to get some more movement, trying to cut, trying to drive and kick and get an advantage. Fantastic when you get an advantage, not as great when you don't create an advantage. So are you going to be able to find different things? Because when you're all healthy, you are kind of smallish to a degree with your best players, with your best lineups. But, you know, if you have everyone, you know, BJ Edgecombe getting downhill, Tyrese getting downhill, Quentin Grimes can get downhill at times, Kelly Oubre. So you have some people that can cause a little bit of chaos around Joel Embiid. You got to work to get there, and then you have to be able to do it when he's off the floor. So for me, it's just, how do you build that base? Can the defense be better than it was last year so you can have some consistency? What's around it?
No, I think that is fair. I think that is fair. And it kind of flows into the biggest questions for me. Like, number one, naturally, just how healthy will the team be? And when will everybody come back? Still waiting on Embiid, still waiting on PG, Jared McCain as well. So there's that, because of course there is. Beyond that, I'm glad you hit on the defense, because of the different lineup combinations they can get to. And because, like, honestly, I would imagine there's going to be a level of maintenance when it comes to Joel Embiid to make sure we do get him to the postseason if we get there, type beat. So, like, does this mean it's going to be more Embiid in the drop versus some of the toying at the level that we've seen in years past and some of the late switches that they tossed in? Because he can do it at peak levels. But, like, how much do you want to tap that button during the regular season, or at least early on, is of intrigue. And that naturally puts a lot of pressure on those perimeter guys. Like, Tyrese Maxey, are you ready to guard up? Paul George, which level are you going to be at? VJ Edgecombe, as you already mentioned, certainly has the tools. Are you ready to play high-level NBA defense from day one? Like, that's a tough job for anyone, even with, I feel like the last three or four rookie classes have all produced, like, really good defenders from day one. So I won't rule it out, but that is just a job that he has to prove. So just how they kind of navigate the defense schematically is going to be interesting to me. And then on a minor note, we talked about Gershon Yabusele a little bit earlier in the show and how he popped for Philly last year. You would like for, like, an actual four to pop on the roster at some point. Like, does Trendon Wofford become this year's Yabu for them as the actual four, size four that can shoot a little bit, put the ball on the floor a little bit, if they are going to play more aggressively defensively, can fly around a little bit on the back end as well? Like, does he become the out of the quote unquote out of nowhere impact player to help round out the rotation for them? Like, I am intrigued to see the answer to that question. Steve, who are your X factor or breakout candidates for this group?
I hate to put it all on the rookie, but VJ Edgecombe. I think the better he is, the better they'll be. So I think that I've liked the quick decisions from VJ Edgecombe. I've liked the drives from BJ Edgecombe. I've liked how he's been able to work off ball. If I'm spaced and kick to me, I can get and drive a closeout, I can get a flare, I can really make an impact in those tight windows. I've liked the reads that he's made. So I think if they can really nail that, they're going to feel better about their season.
Okay. I think for me, like, I think the earnest answer should probably be, especially since I just talked about Trendon Wofford, the earnest answer probably should be Kelly Oubre. Just adds a level of downhill juice that they need and a level of athleticism that they need. And I would imagine he's going to play a good bit of four if he's still in the starting lineup. So, like, he should be the answer. But also, Steve, year after year after year in the Joel Embiid era, they've been looking for a backup center that can do its job so they don't die with Embiid off the floor. I would like Andre to
Drummond,
present...
Andre Drummond respect. Let's go.
Not quite. Which pains me. But... not quite. I'm intrigued by the Adam Bona experience this year, Steve. I think he can be a quality backup center for the Sixers group. Preseason has been fun. He had fun flashes last season as well. Dynamic roller, going to crush the offensive glass. He just moves well. If we talk about activity defensively, he can get up to the level. If he's good, that helps the non-Embiid situation. When he's available and even when he's out, if he's going to be spot starter, or if they do go to Andre Drummond, the spot starter, and they keep Adam Bona as the backup, being an impact guy off the bench, that helps them. So I want to make sure I say his name on the podcast. All right, from there, Steve, what do you think the best lineup for the Sixers is going to be?
I mean, I'm assuming health. Let's go Joel Embiid. Let's get Kelly Oubre out there. Let's go Paul George. Let's go VJ Edgecombe, Tyrese Maxey.
Okay, okay. For me, I have Tyrese Maxey, Quentin Grimes, VJ Edgecombe, PJ, Paul George, and Joel Embiid. I was trying to say like Paul George and PG at the same time. It just did not work. But I think that's going to be the five. What's the lineup you most want to see?
My starting on the lineup that I said was the best one.
There you go. That works. Maxi Grimes, PG, Watford, and Embiid for me. It's the group that I want to see. We want to see Watford get an opportunity to really secure some 4 minutes for him. All right. That concludes the Atlantic Division. We're going to take a quick break. And when we return, we get into the Central Division. Cavs, Pacers, Bucks, Pistons, Bulls. It's time to dig in. And we are back, and it is now time for Division 2 of the pod. Time to roll with the Central Division. We are starting with the Cleveland Cavaliers, Steve, coming off of a 64-18 season. First in offense, flirting with the highest offensive rating in NBA history. Eighth in defense, third in net rating. And for me, my excitement level starts with another year under Kenny Atkinson, another year of Kenny Ball. What are going to be the tweaks? As teams have had now a full year to try to add, to get more tape on them, scout against them, try to defend them. What are going to be the tweaks? What does Kenny want to get more into? How is he going to open up things for Evan Mobley, for example? We've already seen some more design touches for DeAndre Hunter, for an example. Obviously, not, I don't think he's going to average like 20 for them, but these are some subtle things that he's doing a little bit differently compared to last year, as this is like now year one of a full season experience for DeAndre Hunter in Cleveland. So, like, just kept monitoring the offensive tweaks under Kenny Atkinson. And from there, like, they do just have a bunch of top-end talent. And so, just excited to see this offense again. I think that's where it starts for me. What say you?
What does Donovan Mitchell do with another year under Kenny Atkinson? I thought he had a great year last year. What does this look like now? I think, obviously, we've seen, especially with Sam Merrill playing with him, way more, hey, we're going to go inverted. We're going to go guard screens. We're going to try and get him downhill. And so, obviously, you can do that with Darius Garland as well once he gets healthy. Evan Mobley, another year of experience for him. And so, how does he operate in inverted pick and roll? Can he get downhill? Can we see even more consistency with his drives and his jump shot and the comfort that he showed last year? The ball movement's going to be there. So you mentioned DeAndre Hunter, emphasis on getting him the ball in different spots and letting him initiate. But once they create advantage, we know this is a team that's going to punish you. So what's the next evolution look like? How do they get better defensively? What do they prepare to handle as they are going to have the expectations to be at a certain level in this Eastern Conference? And so how do they handle that? Because there's a lot of teams that are going to be looking at them and saying, hey, I think we can get them. So you're going to have to handle success in a different way. But the experience of last year probably gave them some tough lessons, and I want to see how they continue to improve. We've seen them get better each year. Is this the year they finally go over the top?
Yeah. Like, I think the quickly bounce off of that, I know we don't super deal in like narratives on this podcast, but like, this does just feel like a big year for them and for this core. As it feels like, on one hand, it's been, can you actually build a winner with Donovan Mitchell and Darius Garland because of how small it is? And on the other hand, can you really contend with Evan Mobley plus Jared Allen, considering some of the offensive overlap and things like that? The answer for the most part has been like, I guess it's mostly yes, because they perform well when on the court, but they haven't had like the Eastern Conference Finals run, the finals run, et cetera. And so to your point, they're going to make tweaks. I think when Darius Garland gets healthy, this is still going to be an elite group. They should be the one or two seed in the East with reasonable health. They do kind of have to make a run, it feels like, in order for it to be ironclad that these four stay together heading into the offseason or heading into next season. So just kind of keeping an eye on that is worth saying, I think. Again, we don't normally tap that button, but I'll tap it. Like, it kind of has to be a very good Cleveland year, barring extenuating circumstances. I guess related to that, Steve, what's your biggest question heading into the season for the Cleveland Cavaliers?
Well, defense. How much can they get to? We know they're active. Obviously, Evan Mobley is going to be outstanding. Jared Allen's really good on the interior. Their guards are going to be put in action. Are they ready to handle it? Are they going to have their help built in? Can they consistently compete on that end to allow themselves to get out and run? I think if they check that off the box early, I think they take off running. And then what does the Jared Allen of it all look like? What are the different combinations they can get to, especially early in the season? No Max Strus, no Darius Garland. So is it Jalen Tyson? Is it Dean Wade? Is it Lonzo Ball? How do they kind of operate through this early? Because Kenny Atkinson values his depth it believes in his team, puts them in positions to succeed. So it's not like there's going to be this massive drop off to a degree, but they're going to have to build the boat in a little bit of a different way to start. And then how do you get the consistency outside of that?
I think that's fair. I feel like we're pretty much aligned on that front. Like, top of mind for me is, when does Darius Garland get back? And related to that, you've already hit on like some of the depth that's going to need to step up while he is out and while he's getting into form. Even when he does play, I don't think it's going to be straight to 35 minutes a night. Like, I'm sure they're going to make sure he gets in a reasonable rhythm. So are those depth pieces ready to step up? Again, we've already talked about like what offensive tweaks are going to be made and how did the team, you know, take to that. I think on the player side, like, what is the next step for Evan Mobley? Ideally, he does a little bit more of everything, but is it going to be more of an emphasis on, okay, we want you taking 5 threes a game this year at a reasonable level? Or is it more, no, let's tighten up this handle. You've already gotten stronger. We saw the shoulder bumps improve for him to create a little bit more space on the interior. Is it going to be more of an emphasis on, no, let's get you downhill. Let's get you to the free throw line more. Let's unleash some of the self-creation as a finisher more than anything. And like, what does that do for the rest of the roster? So like, that's kind of where I'm thinking on that front. But beyond that, I guess it mostly just goes to like the X factors and stuff for me. Cause like, I think they are just really good. So I don't have major questions outside of that. What are you about to say?
Jared Allen, are you ready to switch this year? Is this the year? Mm. You ready to switch, big dog? We taking this off the table?
And it's like, it's interesting on the Jared Allen front, because like, he has been a quote unquote switch big before. Like, we saw experiment with it in Brooklyn. He has been like a high volume switch guy in Cleveland. We've had a good year for him. We've also seen teams like, yeah, we're not afraid of that guy. We can poke at him a little bit. So to your point, just what level does he actually reach on that front? He's going to be tasked with doing it. Is he ready to hold up? Who are your X factors or breakout candidates?
DeAndre Hunter. I think with them looking to get him the ball in different areas, with him initiating, with him starting more sets, with his cutting, I think if he has a big year and he's able to kind of expand his role within what Cleveland does, that just gives them more talent and more to work with. So I'm keeping an eye on him. And then Sam Merrill, if you hold up defensively, you in trouble. You good. They got you.
No.
But Sam Merrill, if he can continue to hold up defensively, he just gives them a lot of optionality, could play with a lot of different people. And so I'm intrigued to see if he could take another step. Obviously, they believe in him. His shooting is important for them. So I'll probably go those two. And then the Lonzo of it all. I just don't know how many games he's going to get to overall. But his playmaking and his defense can really unlock some combinations for Cleveland when they're fully healthy. So I'm intrigued by that.
Okay. I had Hunter and Lonzo in my notes, so won't hang there too long. Evan Mobley, does he take yet another leap? And he is just firmly like, I know we had a little bit of, not even debate, just more of conversation about who Cleveland's MVP rep was last season. Like, you went Mitchell, I went Mobley. Like, does Mobley take a step offensively to where he is just firmly that type beat? He's young enough and still growing, so like, I can't rule that out because of how good he already is. So like, I will say his name on the pod at the very least. Beyond that, hey, man, if Jalen Tyson is just good, one, that's fun. But two, that takes pressure off of the DeAndre Hunter of it all, even the Lonzo of it all. If we just want to, okay, we're continuing to lean into Garland plus Mitchell, we can go Jalen Tyson plus Hunter plus insert big here if we want to really downside. Like, that level of juice defensively, I want to see the awareness perk up a little bit. Like, he got lost on cuts and relocations a little more than I would like, but he flies around. He adds a level of secondary rim protection. He certainly doesn't mind taking on tough defensive assignments. He moves well off the ball, can find open areas. Like, I like him. Like, strong summer league. I've tweeted it. Like, it's been the summer of Jalen Tyson. So seeing him start in some preseason games hasn't surprised me in light of who's been in and who's been out. If he actually parlays this into I am a rotation piece firmly, that's a good hit for Cleveland. It just adds to their depth. So I'll say his name since the other ones have been mentioned. Steve, who do you think Cleveland's best lineup would be? Or what do you think is going to be their best lineup?
Darius Garland, Donovan Mitchell, DeAndre Hunter, Evan Mobley, Jared Allen.
Right there with you. Is that also the lineup you want to see? Or do you have something different?
No. Give me Evan Mobley. Give me DeAndre Hunter. Give me Lonzo Ball. Give me Donovan Mitchell. Give me Darius Garland.
Okay. well, we have the same best lineup. I think they're just going to crush teams when they're on the floor together. Lineup I want to see: Lonzo Ball, Donovan Mitchell, DeAndre Hunter, Jalen Tyson, Evan Mobley.
Oh, you're all in. Okay.
Hey, listen, give me the size around Mitchell. Give me the defense. Give me the listen. I think that's where I'm at. With all due respect to Dean Wade and some of the others that can also slide in at the four and things alongside Evan Mobley at the five. But yeah, that's the group I want to see. All right. It's time to move to the Indiana Pacers, Steve. Fresh off of a finals berth, a 50-32 season, ninth in offense, 14th in defense, in which I'll once again remind folks that they were just a top 10 defense for like 3.5 months before we hit the playoffs. But either way, 14th in defense, 13th in net rating. Steve, I am, you know, similar to the top of the Boston segment. This can be like a house money year for them. Expectations seem lowered in light of the Tyrese Halliburton injury and all of the other guard injuries, apparently, that they've dealt with. So get well soon to everyone, friend of the program, Tyrese Halliburton, et cetera. But like, this was a team that was not necessarily counted out, but like overlooked slash underrated for large portions of last season. And they made the finals and went to 7. And so this is functionally a group that takes that stuff in or just ignores it completely. But either way, they lean into and pour into each other and they look to beat you. We got our full season of this. And related to that, it is time for Pascal Siakam to earn more respect than he gets. This is just a top 15 player in the league.
Oh, my.
And he's just really good, Steve. On both ends. Incredibly impactful on both ends of the floor. And now this is just going to be his for the majority of the season. I'm excited to see the Pascal Siakam experience in full form. So that's where I start. What say you, good sir?
I'm excited to see how the Pacers keep being the Pacers while not being the Pacers, but still being the Pacers. They're going to find a way to be who they are. It's going to look a little different. It's going to take a little bit more at times, but that ball is going to move. There's going to be tempo in the half court. There's going to be cutting, and there's going to be effort defensively. So how do they get to that in a different season? Because you can't necessarily take them lightly. And the way they play, you can't necessarily ease up defensively. But do you just lean in on switches and say, hey, this is just what you got. You got to beat us this way. And that's where it gets interesting to see how they kind of navigate throughout the season. It kind of leads into, like, it leads into my questions, though, which is the feeling that that defense that grew last year and helped them make that finals run has to hit at a high level with this team. Mm-hmm. Like, there's not as much margin for error. They have to be able to get stops consistently and find their rhythm on that end. So that way they can make sure they get out and run a little bit more at times. And then who's the big that's going to do things without Miles Turner here? Is it Isaiah Jackson? I'm not certain. Is it Jay Huff? I'm not certain. Is it just Obi Toppin? Is this opportunity for Jairus Walker to do more things? Like, they have to figure that portion of it out pretty quickly to make sure they get going on the right track. But that's probably where I'm at, question-wise and excitement-wise.
Okay. All right. Well, flowing off of that, also similar questions about who's going to pop in the center room. A friend in the program and just general excellent basketball mind, Caitlin Cooper, recently wrote about the center situation of the Indiana Pacers. And so check that out. Subscribe to the Patreon, et cetera. There's the plug. But no. The center room is going to be very important for the Pacers. Like, I think Isaiah Jackson seems to be first up in terms of proving it and ultimately having a firm grip on the starting role. But they do have a lot of bigs that can do different things at the very least. Ideally, you're in a room, you know, similar to the Boston situation, to where all these dudes can do different things and the coaches feel comfortable plugging them in situationally versus, oh my God, we don't know who's going to be good. Your turn. Please help us. It can't be that. If the Pacers want to hit the high notes. To the pace point, like, obviously the defense is going to factor in quite a bit, forcing those turnovers, forcing those misses, and being able to run in transition to keep that up. But if we're taking anything for preseason play, they have certainly tried to play fast. The ball has gone to the other team slash out of bounds a lot in the early goings of this one. So, like, can they maintain their pace while also maintaining possession of the basketball. Like, that is as simplistic as it is. They are going to have to do that to be able to maintain their level as well. And then, as excited as I am about Pascal Siakam, what does the half-court offense look like aside from him? I think there's going to be more on the plate for Andrew Nembhard. There's going to be more on the plate of Benedict Mathurin. And if they can bottle up any more of those, what was it, 8-for-8 in the first half against? If you could bottle that up for a whole season, then by all means. But just in general, who's going to be the consistent creator? Benedict Mathurin and Andrew Nembhard are going to be up for the challenge. Just how effective are they going to be taking on more of a half-court usage in terms of the scoring stuff? I think that's where I go in terms of my biggest questions. And from there, Steve, who are your breakout candidates? Who are your X factors?
Well, I was all set to say Andrew Nembhard being able to have more of a chunk of the offense and generate things. But everything I've seen and heard from Benedict Mathurin has told him, I'll do it. And so I'm going to go Benedict Mathurin, and let's see what this looks like with a clearer runway and more opportunity and a clearer path to playing time. I would also like to see him defend at a higher level. Like, the offense, I believe, is going to be there. But this is an opportunity for you to solidify yourself on the other end. And so you should probably do that, sir.
Yeah, I go back to, what was it, Pacers-Wolves early in the preseason. And it was just Mathurin getting the Anthony Edwards excitement early. I was like, oh, this is interesting. But the back of my head, it's like, oh, he has to guard Anthony Edwards. I don't know if I love that. You know what I mean? That's a lot of navigation and a lot of shots. And then you know you're going to want to get shots up on the other end as well. Like, that's a lot. We'll see. But no, I'm right there with you on Mathurin. Won't hang there too long. Isaiah Jackson, as we both talked about the big room. Like, that's kind of where it starts for me. He is incredibly athletic. He has been a pretty high-octane shot blocker since he's been in the league. So, again, seems healthy. That's obviously a positive. But can you nail the per-possession stuff? Like, the blocks are cool. Are you at the level? Are you dropping back? If you have to defend the second one, are you getting back up? Are you able to contain from there? When you are rolling from the weak side, are you ready to contest? Are you hunting blocks and opening up dump downs and stuff like that? So it's just like, with him getting more of an opportunity and naturally there just being more of a spotlight now with no Miles Turner, like, is he ready for, like, starting center responsibility? Because it is going to be different from, like, the 14 to 17 minutes per game he was playing off the bench, where he could just provide that energy and then run the floor. He's got to nail the little things now. So excited for him, though. Steve, what do you think Indy's best lineup is going to be?
Give me Andrew Nembhard. Give me Benedict Mathurin. Give me Aaron Nesmith, Pascal Siakam, and Obi Toppin.
That is the lineup that I have for their best lineup. A plus 5 in 7 minutes last year. I would imagine the sample is going to be a little bit higher than 7 minutes this year, but... wow, well done. What is the lineup you want to see? Is it that one, or do you have something different?
Nope. Andrew Nembhard, Benedict Mathurin, Aaron Nesmith, Jairus Walker, Pascal Siakam.
Okay. The lineup I want to see, Andrew Nembhard, Ben Shepherd, Aaron Nesmith, Jairus Walker, Pascal Siakam. I'm glad we had a little bit of difference with that one at the very least. But thus concludes the Indiana Pacers section. We now move to the Milwaukee Bucks, Steve. Coming off of a 48-34 season, they were 10th in offense, 12th in defense, 11th in net rating. We will conservatively say a lot of change this offseason for the Milwaukee Bucks, but they do have Giannis. And if we're talking about excitement level, it starts with Giannis for me. One, at worst, he is a top three player in basketball and just has an argument for the best player in the league, depending on what you prioritize. You mean to tell me that dude's going to have the ball in his hands more? Like, we might actually just get point Giannis this year with a bunch of shooting around him, or at the very least a bunch of small screeners around him to invert things. Sign me up. I will spoil this for, like, articles that are coming out later. Like, Giannis is my preseason MVP pick. I think he's just going to be nuts this year. And I think the box score is going to be nuts. And they're certainly going to need him to be incredibly good on both ends of the floor for this to work. That's my early tip. I think it's a Giannis MVP year. And I'm excited to watch him operate within this context with more responsibility on both ends of the floor, but particularly offensively. I think he's going to be handling the ball a lot. I think the spacing is going to be good enough for him to demolish teams in. We start with Giannis. And then secondarily, hey, pay AJ Green. He's good. He can shoot. He can screen. He fights defensively. I think he's just a good player. I'll sprinkle that in. But I'm ready for Giannis, Steve. What excites you most about this Bucks team?
Well, let's stick with this Giannis deal. Because okay. Typically I am the Giannis MVP rep around here, so I'm intrigued. They're going to have to win some games for that to happen. And I imagine that this is a team where teams are going to double team Giannis in the post.
Yeah.
And they're going to trap and they're going to make someone else make plays. So that part gets interesting. I think obviously Giannis is set up to have a great season. He's going to be aggressive. I think he's going to play a pace tempo. He's going to be responsible for a lot of what they do. What do they do around that? And does the defense respect anyone outside of Giannis Antetokounmpo as far as we have to do something? Are we just going under? Are we just switching? Are we just trying to deal with that? Miles Turner, pretty good fit if you're going to lose Brook Lopez. So you're going to have a little bit more defensively to a degree, but you're also going to have someone who can space the floor, can short roll, can do different things. So I think watching them play together should be interesting and fun. But I'm a little cautious about how the league is going to treat the Milwaukee Bucks. This feels like a good process, we don't care type of season to a degree.
Mm. So I assume that is your biggest question mark, just how teams treat Milwaukee at large.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. That's fair. Like, I'm in a similar vein. My question in my notes, what does the team look like with Giannis off the floor? Like, naturally, when your best player is on the bench, there's a level of productivity you want to have. You don't want to completely die. Like, i.e., when Jokic goes to the bench in Denver and it's just bad for the most part, we both feel better about what it's going to look like this year. But in light of that, because I don't disagree that I don't see another two-on-the-ball threat on this Bucks roster. Like, the closest thing to it is probably Bobby Portis against second units. He may see some more doubles on some of those touches, depending on who he is backing down. But, like, that's probably the closest you get. Giannis is just the guy. And so that does present opportunity for everyone else. The guard room, okay, if I'm just getting dropped, let's knock down some pull-ups. Let's explore the space. Let's get some stuff to go. So, like, there's opportunity there. But, yeah, I don't know if I see anyone else that's going to garner, like, two on-the-ball attention consistently outside of Giannis. I think that's fair, and that will be accentuated when Giannis goes to the bench. While Bobby Portis is probably your best avenue to drawing that kind of attention, I don't think I want the second unit offense to just be, we are posting up Bobby Portis, that's it. You know what I mean? Like, I do want to see, like, what level of variety to come over with offensively when Giannis is off the floor. And then beyond that, it also kind of flows into, like, the X factor bit for me. Just who pops in the guard room? I've already shouted out AJ Green. But that's more, I accentuate Giannis, I play off of others more than AJ Green's about to break you down and get some buckets. Like, there are some fun clips from last year from him on that front, but, like, that's not going to be a high volume thing for him, I appear. So that's more so, you know, when Ryan Rollins checks in, for example, what is that going to look like? Is he able to make enough plays? Because I trust him to defend, I trust him to be able to play off of Giannis, but, like, can he create enough for himself to kind of keep things going? Like, that's kind of where I'm looking for Milwaukee.
Well, real quick, I will say there's a lot of good stuff that Giannis has been doing, excuse me, in the preseason, as far as just being in control, the spacing around him, getting downhill, the passing, which hopefully people will respect this year, but being able to flow into that as a screener. Like, there's been good process for Milwaukee. I just think it's going to take a lot. Like, Gary Trent Jr. is going to have to knock down a lot of shots. Mm-hmm. Like, the guys going to have to knock down a lot of shots, because I think you're going to be able to get teams in rotation, but you got to make them pay.
Yeah, and I think this is a Bucks team that was, I think, by percentage, the best three-point shooting team in the league last year. So, like, that's a high bar to live up to. Hard thing to replicate. And then from there, just, like, what is the actual volume going to be? What percentage of their shots are coming from three? It's going to be something to track with this Milwaukee offense. But, actually, one quick question I'll toss to you, Steve. How do you feel about this Bucks defense heading into the year?
I like the Miles Turner of it all. I like Giannis being able to roam.
Mm-hmm. Okay, fair enough. Like, I feel like I'm, like, cautiously optimistic about the defense because they have that front court, and also, like, none of their guards are, like, high-level defenders, but, like, they're all strong for their position, so there should be some switchability there. Like, I think they can hold serve, honestly. Like, it would not surprise me if the Bucks what were they, 12th, 13th in defense last year? 12th. If they're ninth, that's not going to surprise me. So we'll see what it looks like.
Look at you believing in a Doc Rivers team.
That's a champion right there, Steve. What do you mean? But who are your breakout candidates or your X factors for this Bucks group?
I think I can't get past Gary Trent Jr. Like, I think AJ Green being consistent, getting consistent time and scoring is huge. They need Gary Trent Jr. to be a knockdown shooter for this to work at a high level.
That's fair. I have Kyle Kuzma in all caps in my notes. This has to be a season in which he is able to hold serve across multiple positions defensively. Does not have to be an A+, but you just can't be a liability. Offensively, knock down spot ups when you get them. I trust that the screening and the cutting is going to be there because we've seen both of those things pop in preseason play so far. And even sort some of the Milwaukee stint when he got there last year, particularly the cutting. But the drives, I need this to be a much better drive season for Kyle Kuzma than what it was last year before joining Milwaukee, and especially when joining Milwaukee. He has the frame to get downhill. Please finish at the basket and complete some of these possessions. If Kyle Kuzma is good, that just unlocks lineup versatility for them. That is a little bit more half-court creation to my earlier question about what it looks like sans Giannis. Like, a Kuzma year would be very good for Milwaukee, especially in light of what they gave up to bring him into the building. But, Steve, what do you think Milwaukee's best lineup is going to be?
Giannis, Gary Trent Jr., Kyle Kuzma, Bobby Portis, Miles Turner.
You do not sound oh my goodness. Okay, for me, Ryan Rollins, AJ Green, Gary Trent Jr., Giannis, and Miles Turner. I think it's going to be the best lineup. Is that also the lineup you want to see?
No, AJ Green, Gary Trent Jr., Kyle Kuzma, Miles Turner, and Giannis.
Okay. Ryan Rollins, AJ Green, Gary Trent Jr., Giannis, and Jericho Sims for me. Get some more athleticism in the room, some switchability at the five spot. I like it. Could also argue like Giannis at the five, Kyle Kuzma at the four, but that's the group I want to see. We got two more, Steve. We roll to the Detroit Pistons. Kind of a breakout season of sorts for them last year. Ended the playoff drought. 44-38. 14th in offense, 10th in defense, 12th in net rating. And I will toss this to you, good sir. What are you most excited about with this year's Detroit Pistons?
Kay Cunningham.
Yeah.
Can he take another step? Can he take another leap? Can he do this every single night? Can he help elevate Detroit? We've seen parts of it. Does it get even better in the preseason? He's looked pretty dangerous. And then how do you build on the success last year? Can you continue to add more movement offensively? Will you compete defensively? What does Asar Thompson look like this year as far as getting downhill and driving? And what is, how does that impact your team? But it's Kate to me. How far can he drive this team?
How far can he drive it is very, I love the verbiage there because I think the Kate drives naturally are going to be important. Was one of the more prolific mid-range scorers that we had in the league this year. Can he parlay that into more rim attempts, more free throw attempts? We did see a bump in both last year, but how does he build on that? My excitement level is very much with Cade, especially with a little bit more shooting around him this year. We saw last season what adding shooting talent around him can do, considering how good he is. So you get Duncan Robinson, you get Caris LeVert that can knock down spot-ups at the very least. Like, I am intrigued by the Cade Cunningham experience. Was very good in preseason. Beyond that, a healthy Asar Thompson, a more unleashed and more utilized offensively Asar Thompson, on-ball reps are going to be of high intrigue for me. I'll put it that way. Handoffs, pick and rolls, what are the design touches for him? We're going to have some like cuts from the corner to get him downhill with a dribble. Like, how are they going to use him outside of, I can just get three offensive rebounds a game because I'm lurking around the dunker spot and I jump higher than everybody else. That part's going to be fun. And I've said it before, I'll say it again. He is just an all defense caliber guy in plain sight. If he is healthy and he plays enough, I just do not see how he does not make a team. Unless there's like some unforeseen slippage on that end. But I think he is just that good. So I'm just excited to see more Asar Thompson, period, in addition to the Cade Cunningham of it all. What's your biggest question surrounding this Pistons group?
Are they ready to take another leap in the half court? This is a team that is fun. I think they found enough movement. Jalen Duren improved last year. I think Isaiah Stewart also gives them a different pop. So they have bigs they can work through. They have different guards they can operate with. They can get to drive and kick. But are you ready to take the next leap? So in the playoffs, you're prepared for what teams throw at you. So can you build that consistency? And then can the defense hold up no matter what the matchup is? Can you get what you need out of your bigs? Do you feel confident on that end every single night? We know they have Asar. Tobias gonna have to hold up. Cade's gonna have to hold up. They're gonna have to compete at a high level on that end.
Okay. And honestly, I'm glad you said that, because as I was trying to work through my Pistons thoughts, a little bit of yesterday, a little bit this morning, and I was just like, as simple as it sounds, the Pistons are just good. Like, I trust the coaching. Like, I trust, like, the movement that they implemented last year and some of the, like, the flashes from their bigs to kind of maintain their continuity in the half court. I trust their defensive principles. Their offseason additions were good. It's just like, I don't know if I have, like, a big picture, what do they do? And so what I had in my notes was, what or who is the ceiling raiser for this group? Like, what is the thing that would take them from they are good, they're going to at least be tough in the playoffs, if not win around, to, oh my goodness, here come the Detroit Pistons. And maybe it is just another step in the half court offensively. Because I think conceptually, like, again, they do good stuff. They've added a little bit more talent. Like, is there more there? I think the closest I could get to were, like, player specific, like, what is the Jaden Ivey of it all with this group? Which, to quickly spoil, like, my X Factor or breakout candidate, like, I guess more X Factor than me. But, like, how does Jaden Ivey fit in? I think from a talent perspective and from an investment perspective, he should just firmly be part of their top eight or top nine. But, like, and we've seen positive seeds of him playing off of Cade Cunningham. Spot-up shooting has gotten better, for an example. Cade can initiate, now he's attacking tilted defenses. You want him to grow as a finisher and stuff like that. So it's just like, is that the thing? Is it just some subtle tweaks in the half court and then you actually get an Ivey year that helps take you over the top when Cade's on the bench or something like that? But other than that, like, they're just a good team to me.
They're good. They're good. They're fun. But I think they're relying on internal development. I think Ivy, Ron Hall, and Asar taking a leap is something they're counting on to have more around it. We know that they value having playmaking on the court, you know, so Jaden Ivey's going to have an opportunity. We saw that with Dennis Schroeder last year. We know they value having a level of shooting on the court to maintain spacing. And we know they value having a big on the court who could be active. So the formula is still there. The talent's changed a little bit, but I think it's the internal development that would probably raise the ceiling for them.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's fair. As far as breakouts and X factors for me, like, mention the Star Thompson. More of him should just be a good thing. He's been part of the best lineups. Like, he's just one of their best players, period. If we're talking about the defense going from 10th to like 6th or something like that, a lot of that will be because there's just more Star Thompson. He's taking on these assignments. He's creating turnovers. Like, he is just going to be that important. But again, you get a good Ivy year. Hello, Detroit. Or even just on a more basic level, if we want to add something else to the room, we can now tell teams, well, here's Jaden Ivy plus whatever to get the thing in the room. Like, we talked about Lauri Markkanen this offseason. Like, if they actually want to go sniffing around a Lauri Markkanen deal and Jaden Ivey's good, I would imagine that makes those conversations easier to make, or easier to have, for an example. But those are my two, man. Who do you have?
Outside the box, Ron Holland. Sure. I am intrigued to see if he can take another step defensively and pressure the ball and be a little bit more of a menace on that end than offensively. More confidence with the shot, understanding of spacing, when to cut, drive a couple closeouts. Think he becomes a little bit more of an impact player for the Pistons. So Ron Holland for me.
I love the Ron Holland shout. Jumper looks smoother. A very short participant of Summer League this year because he just did not belong on that court complimentary. I'm right there with you on that one. What do you think Detroit's best lineup is going to be?
Give me Cade. Give me Duncan Robinson. Give me Asar Thompson, Tobias Harris, Jalen Duren.
Ooh, so close. So close. I have those first four. And Isaiah Stewart, just to get a little bit more spacing out there. But we're pretty aligned on that front. Is that also the lineup you want to see from Detroit? Or most want to see, rather?
Give me Cade Cunningham. Give me Jaden Ivey. Give me Ron Holland. Give me Asar Thompson. Give me Isaiah Stewart.
Okay, I like it. For me, Cade Cunningham, Caris LeVert, Tobias Harris, Asar Thompson, and Isaiah Stewart would be my
Hooray!
There we go. And finally, we close with the Chicago Bulls, coming off of a 39-43 season, 20th in offense, 19th in defense, 20th in net rating. And the excitement level for me, Steve, a lot of things intrigue me with this Bulls team, oddly enough. In terms of actual excitement, it's Matas Buzelis. He's already so good. Second half of last year was tremendous. Like, when we did our fake ballots, I think he was either 10th for me or, like, the first guy I left off on all-rookie second team. But was certainly a close call for me either way. He has this summer, and was like, okay, yeah, he's ready to do more. And then preseason, it's also just apparent, yeah, he's ready to do more. And so I am just excited to see the growth and the expansion of role for Matas Buzelis. What are the drives going to look like? How many handoffs or pick and rolls do they give him compared to some of just the general off-ball work that we saw from him last year? Is he ready for more? Like, the drives feel better. He seems even more physical with some of those drives as well. Defensively, he will send your shot into the third row. Already pretty good weak side defensively. I'm here for the Matas Buzelis experience. That is going to be my primary Bulls league pass reason.
Well, last year was an epiphany for the Bulls as far as we are going to play fast, we're going to shoot threes, we're going to get up and down. What is the next step for this grouping? And it's especially going to be interesting at the start because some of the veteran presence they got in the second half of the season is in and out of the lineup. Hope Kobe White gets better. But Can they add more of that within the half court as opposed to just jetting up and down? Can they keep pressure on teams? Are they going to be that kind of unit? Defensively, can we show some growth? So can you get to, we're not just fun, we're consistent, we're annoying. Can they take that step this year with the youth? So you're younger now, you have a clear path, you have clear answers, but can we kind of just be dynamic and use this space to open up different things for everyone else?
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I think flowing into my questions, like, one, top of mind, what is this defense going to be? How good is this defense going to be? My early guess is not very, but, like, what is the pathway to being, like, decent, survivable? We get enough steps to where we can maintain our pace and push this up. And maybe that alleviates some of the half-court questions that you have. Like, is it going to be, like, they're icing everything, for example. Like, is it going to be that just being sturdier with that? What Hope type not. Of switching do they tap into? Yeah, like, the reps have been, I'll say I'm not very bullish on what I've seen so far. But just what are they trying to establish on that front is top of mind for me. And then within that, what interior growth do we see from Josh Giddey? The playmaking speaks for itself. And as many people have cited, we even talked about on the pod last year, when we got to the second half and Josh Giddey was flirting with triple doubles every night and was shooting very well from three on moderate volume. I think even if he shoots well again from three this year, we're at least a year away before teams change how they actually want to defend his three pointers. So for me, it's more when you get inside of the arc, what does that look like? He has some floaters in his bag. And one of the things that impressed me during that run last year was that these 14-foot floaters were more consistently turning into 10-foot floaters or 9-foot floaters. Like, he's edging closer with an extra dribble, using the shoulders and the elbows to carve out a little bit more space for him. Can he continue that growth? Preseason play, it's been iffy, we'll put it that way. And so you hope that he's able to regain some of that, because that is going to be your best bet at, to your point, Steve, actually having a little bit more juice in the half court. He's going to have the ball in his hands a ton. He's going to have to threaten defenses more downhill to open up some of those swings, some of those closeout attacks, etc. That's how they get there. So, like, naturally monitoring, like, what kind of steps he takes on that front.
Well, you took the beats right off my page, the defense. Can it just be something? Can you get to do your job territory? Or is this going to be a cycle of our transition defense is not great? We're getting hit and pick and roll. We're getting beat off the bounce. Oh, no. Like, they can't be that. If you're, it's one thing to push off made baskets. It's another thing to only push off made baskets. And I think Chicago needs to not live in that territory.
Yeah, it gets spooky very quickly. As far as breakout or X factors, who you got, Steve?
Ayo Dosunmu. Once again,
I like it.
Ayo Dosunmu, the defense, the drives. I believe in the shot. I think he's got the juice, and I want to see it happen. Salute to Isaac Okoro. But I need Ayo Dosunmu to do the thing this year, because this is what I believe the third year that I have done this somehow.
You have been a long-term Ayo Dosunmu defender, so I will co-sign you on that. I just mentioned the Josh Giddey of it all. Like, naturally, as their best player and the guy that they just invested in with a big contract, it would be helpful if he takes a leap, because duh. Beyond that, you mentioned Isaac Okoro. I had him down in my notes. I think he should start, honestly, because I think he could be a part of solving the do your job portion of the defense. Having someone that they could toss on the opposing team's best player would be helpful. Because if it's not him, someone's just going to be underqualified. Or you're just putting that on Matas Buzelis. And again, I am much more intrigued by him defensively off the ball than on it. Not that he can't do it, but I think he's at his best when he's cleaning stuff up versus having to guard Kawhi Leonard or guard insert star wing here. So if Okoro can continue to knock down threes, shout out our dear pal Justin Rowan, who's been charting for a while he was still in Cleveland, just since the calendar year, 2022, 23? He's just made threes, which is a big development. Hit enough threes, get enough cuts, defend well. That should help stabilize Chicago a little bit. And then quickly, Steve, where are we at on Patrick Williams at this point?
Okay.
not his time. Look, man, defense, forward that can take on tough defensive assignments. He's never healthy. He did not live up to the ultimately unfair, like, Kawhi comparisons that he was getting early. Like, I would just like him to be competent on both ends. We've seen three-point shooting. We've seen some mid-range stuff. He's seen some defense. Doesn't feel like he's ever really put all three of those things together at the same time. And if he does, it's like three games max. A good Patrick Williams season would make me feel good.
I was really hoping you got all your Bulls passion out earlier this week.
I'm so sorry. What do you think the Bulls' best lineup is going to be?
Kobe White, Ayo Dosunmu, Isaac Okoro, Matas Buzelis, Nikola Vucevic. And yes, okay, that doubles.
Okay, fair enough. Best lineup for me, Trey Jones, Ayo Dosunmu, Kevin Herter, Matas Buzelis, Zach Collins. Lineup I most want to see, Trey Jones, Ayo Dosunmu, Kevin Herter, Matas Buzelis, and Zach Collins. We also got...
Did you say Zach Collins twice?
I sure did.
Are you okay?
Matas plus second unit is going to eat.
Hit the horns, man. Get us out of here.
There's your Bulls prediction, folks. Not what's wrong with you. That's crazy. Thank you for listening or watching this episode of The Dunker Spot. Please subscribe if you haven't already. We're on Apple, Spotify, RIP Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcast, you can find us. Subscribe to the Yahoo Sports YouTube page. We are here every Tuesday and every Friday, so rock with us. You can follow me on socials at Nikias
NBA. Nikias NBA, you can follow me on socials at SteveJones20, and we'll see you guys next time. Zach Collins twice. Man.